Welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm your host, Jenna Josephowski, but you can call me Jenna J. I'm a semi-retired professional dancer, dance teacher, and yoga teacher, turned certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor who helps active women learn to lift and get strong with equal parts challenge and compassion. After years of working in the fitness industry, I got sick and tired of watching people, including myself, run themselves into the ground trying to uphold the narrow-minded image of what our culture sees as healthy and fit. But instead of giving it all up, I decided that I'd rather change the game, call out the BS, extract the good, and help others learn to use movement as a way to build themselves up rather than tear themselves down. On this podcast, we'll explore the intersection of fitness and anti-diet culture and all the gray areas in between. We'll let go of shoulds and judgment and dig into tough conversations with curiosity. Things get pretty spicy around here, so grab your headphones and let's do this. Hey friends, welcome to Tough Cookie Talks. I'm super excited for this week's podcast guest, and I know I always say that, but I actually mean it. I've been waiting to bring this guest on for a while now because she focuses a lot on recovery, something that we don't necessarily think of in terms of recovering from our workouts. And I learned this firsthand the other day when I had made a post inside of my own coaching group, Tough Love Strength Club, our Discord group, talking about how I was trying to spend a little bit more time on recovery for myself. And one of my clients chimed in and was like, oh, what are you recovering from? Were you sick? Were you injured? And I was like, nah, I just like to work out. In any case, one of the things that we don't necessarily consider all the time is how things like our sleep, our hydration, our nutrition, our stress reduction, all of those things affect how we show up to our workouts. So let's get into the episode today with my friend and fellow fitness professional, Julie Schiller. Julie is the owner of The Other 23 Hours Coaching, which is a hybrid personal training and recovery coaching business based in Long Beach, California. As a social worker and an ACSM certified personal trainer, Schiller brings a unique approach to the health and fitness industry. She has a decade of working with students in commercial, corporate, and private settings, and is a pain-free performance, kettlebell and performance specialist, a precision nutrition coach, and a sleep, stress management, and recovery coach. Before becoming a coach full-time, Julie earned her BA in sociology from the University of Hartford and her MSW from the University of Denver. She comes from a family of educators and social justice advocates and has always felt a deep connection to working with communities that have been historically underserved. She was inspired to become a personal trainer after she experienced the firsthand transformative impact that movement and intentional recovery strategies had on her professional and personal life. She wants to pass this amazing gift on to others. Her program, The Other 24 Hours, is a strength and conditioning program that emphasizes the importance of rest and recovery first. She's also the co-host of The Other 23 Hours podcast with her wife, licensed clinical social worker, Kelsey Hobson Schiller. As a native East Coaster, Schiller takes pizza very seriously and will not apologize for eating it or call it a cheat meal. She also loves strong coffee, her pup Millie, and cat Mustache. She firmly believes that life can and should be enjoyed. I could not agree more. So without further ado, let's get into the conversation with Julie. Hey, Julie, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jenna, what's going on? Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you here. I've been thinking about having you on the podcast for a while because, I mean, you talk about so many great things when it comes to, well, everything fitness related, to be honest, but specifically recovery, which I think is something that doesn't get a lot of love necessarily, or not as much as it should. So can we start off and you can just tell us a little bit more about you, who you are, what you do, how you got into it, all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. I think recovery deserves a little bit more of a front and center than it's getting in the fitness space. So I'm super pumped to talk about this. So my name is Julie Schiller, and I'm a social worker turned personal trainer and recovery coach. So that's kind of a mouthful. I started my career in the social work field, and I realized pretty quickly that we couldn't talk about mental health without talking about physical health too. Uh-huh. So I got certified while I was working as a social worker and ended up working both jobs, social work and fitness, for a few years.
Wow.
And yeah, I don't think you actually know that piece about me.
No.
I'm going to share it. And so I was doing some crazy stuff for a while. I was working 6 a.m. boot camp group classes and teaching one-on-one personal training sessions in commercial gym settings, and then going to my 9-to-5, sometimes nights and weekends, nonprofit job and doing that.
Wow.
And after a couple of years of doing that, I said to myself, I don't think this is sustainable. So I'm going all in on fitness.
All right.
And I was really nervous about it, to be honest. You know, like, big transitions like that are totally scary, but it felt right. And it felt like something that the fitness space really needed at the time.
Yeah.
And so I went all in on health and fitness. And I moved out to LA in 2014 and was doing fitness. And I was working in commercial gyms and corporate gym settings. And you know this firsthand, the schedule of the personal trainer in those spaces, the demands that are asked of you, the early mornings and the late nights. We're expected to be these superhuman people.
Yeah.
And, you know, after a few years of doing that, quite honestly, I hit a bit of a rough patch. I had recurring injuries and pain and, quite honestly, exhaustion and burnout. And I just couldn't keep up with that schedule anymore. I thought really something was wrong with me. But in the end, after a lot of reflection and being forced to work on my own recovery and my own sleep and my own stress management, I realized it wasn't me. It was the culture that was being set up for the personal trainer.
Oh, so 100%.
At the time, it was such a hard thing for me to go through, to show up for my clients, sort of like checking the boxes, putting on my game face and just going through the day, training 10 clients a day. Because I'm not a person that shows up and checks boxes. I like to show up fully for people and over deliver. And I wasn't able to do that anymore. It was a blessing in disguise that I had to take a step back from doing the most in the gym, from doing the most outside the gym, and really focus on creating a plan for recovery, for sleep and stress management that worked for me. And that led me to starting my own business in 2019 and putting recovery at the forefront of the work that I do with my clients. That led to creating my signature offer, The Other 23 Hours, and going all in on The Other 23 Hours coaching, because I see this as just a way to transform the health and fitness industry. And so that's why I care so much about recovery, because life kicked my butt for a long time. And now I know a different way to do it. And I can share that message with other people.
We need to know, Julie. We want you to tell us all the things. And the first thing I want to dive into a little bit, because it's interesting, when we talk about recovery, this is something that I've been focusing on for myself a lot more, especially this summer. This is my summer of no. Well, I guess was, now that we're getting towards the end of it and getting into fall. But I've been really trying to make an effort to, you know, get more sleep, say no to more things, have some more downtime, make sure that I'm like eating enough and like actual meals and not just snacks. And I mentioned it in my group, Tough Love Strength Club, because we have a little like group check-in, you know, just kind of like gentle accountability and stuff like that. And I posted that I was focusing more on recovery, and a lot of people were like, oh, what do you mean recovery? Like, what are you recovering from? Because I think a lot of times when people hear the word recovery, they think like, are you recovering from being injured? Are you recovering from being sick? They think of like some kind of big thing. And I don't think people realize how much training is a stressor on our bodies and something that we need to recover from. So can you talk a little bit more about how you define recovery?
Sure. So quite simply, recovery is taking the mind and the body from a stressed or sympathetic kind of fight or flight mode uh-huh. into parasympathetic or rest and digest mode. And I think recovery in the health and fitness space is given an interesting kind of view, especially on social media. We see a lot of like, you know, foam rollers and stuff like that. And that's all great and good, but recovery goes so much deeper than that. For me, recovery isn't just about the physical. I feel like you could do a lot of great work doing active forms of recovery, which we can get into a little bit later, mm-hmm. And also the passive forms. But recovery isn't just about what we do inside the gym. It's about what we do during all the other 23 hours outside of the gym. So mm-hmm. that can go into social. Who are we spending our time with? Who are we giving our energy to? How are we getting our cups refilled by the people we choose to share our energy with? How about our environment? Is our environment inherently stressful? Do we live in areas with noise pollution? So you can think about recovery being social as well. So I would say that it's mental, physical, social, and environmental if we want to look at it from a really holistic perspective. But quite simply, it's taking our minds and bodies from a stress state to a relaxed state so that we're able to show up for our workouts even better. We're able to give more to our workouts, but we're also able to give to our lives.
Yeah.
We don't realize really, like you mentioned, yeah, workouts are a stressor. They're a good kind of stress, right? We feel great after we do them. But where it can get kind of dangerous is if we take that great kettlebell workout that we had, because I know you do a lot of kettlebell work with your people, uh-huh. which is a short-term, really good stressor. It becomes a chronic stressor if we don't take the time to cool down after our session. And then we go straight into life, right? We go straight from those kettlebell swings into sitting into traffic, into that meeting, into picking up our kids. So it's basically stress on top of stress on top of stress on top of stress until we sort of have nothing left to give. So it's about taking the time to bring ourselves down after each stressor so that we're not on overload.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So when a client says to you, and I'm immediately thinking of some of my clients, because I'll always program like within my workouts, a warm up and a cool down in my programs. And some of my clients will come back and be like, I'm too busy. I don't have time for this. Does it really matter? And
totally,
you know, or we get into the conversation of like, oh, well, is this really effective versus that? And honestly, I'm like, these things are suggestions. They're here for you to calm your nervous system. But if there's something else you enjoy better to, you know, get yourself into that state, that's fine. But I think a lot of them are like, I'm too busy. Why should I care? What do you say? For sure.
Well, first of all, to make it relatable, I would tell them that I used to ask the same question. Why do I need to do a cool down? Like, I don't have time for that. You know, I need to finish up inside the gym so that I could go back to life outside the gym. I totally understand not having the time. Totally understand that. And also, I would gently push them to take a step back and understand that a workout is a stressor. So I would, in a non-judgmental way, say that they don't have time not to recover. There isn't time to put this on the back burner, because eventually, we talked about like that stress cup, eventually it's going to turn to being too exhausted to do your workout. So you're going to miss out, being too exhausted to show up to that event with your friends that you really want to go to. Maybe you get pain and eventually an injury in the body, right? In the long term, putting the recovery first actually gives you more time. And it doesn't have to take a lot of time. Right. So just a couple minutes at the end of the workout, just a couple minutes, and bam, you bring your heart rate down, your blood pressure down, and you're good to go. And you're ready to tackle life outside the gym. And I think a lot of times, and I think this is a cultural wide issue, we talk about fitness in this reactive way. Oh, I gotta get back on track. I gotta get back into the gym. New Year's resolutions. We talk about recovery the same way. It's reactive. It's we do it when we need it versus it's built into the workout program, which is how I train my clients. Like it's part of it. We do it before we need it so that we don't need it later.
Oh my God, you're so right. I just had a light bulb moment because how often do we hear, I mean, even the way that my clients ask me, what are you recovering from? How often do we wait until we're actually injured or actually so exhausted that we can't get out of bed?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how we approach most things in Western culture, right?
Yeah.
We wait for it to suck and then we do something about it, right? Mm-hmm. We wait till we're sore to get a massage. We wait until we're in pain to go see the physical therapist.
Yeah.
But in fact, if we add in these like tiny daily doses of recovery every single day, that's going to add up to a whole lot. And it doesn't have to take a ton of time. And I think that's where the education piece for us coaches and trainers come in, showing people that it can be 5 minutes here and there. It doesn't have to be an hour.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
What would you consider to be like a bare minimum recovery practice for somebody who's just trying to incorporate a little bit more of this right now?
So I want to answer this a couple different ways. The first way is I feel like recovery is highly individualized. We can have a template. I could tell you to do this, this, and this. But I really feel like until we understand the barriers, the things getting in the way of someone getting in recovery, I can't say like, do this, right?
Yeah.
So if we're thinking about someone who, like a lot of my clients, they, and a former version of me, we like to do the most in the gym. And so recovery is sort of an afterthought. We could think of like, what's a bare ass minimum for that person?
Yeah.
Right. So a bare ass minimum for that person is to focus on the biggest dial movers that are going to get you back to those intense workouts. Mm-hmm. So that would be sleep quality and stress management. And that can be different things to different people. Hydration and food that's both nourishing and you're going to feel your workouts, but that you also enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Food's delicious. And this is sort of in chronological order. So really like sleep quality and stress is the biggest bang for your buck. Like I would say start there and sort of nail a couple habits in there, whether it's, kind of taking a look at your evening routine, sort of how you wind down from go, go, go mode, which we're all in, right? To, okay, it's time to chill mode.
Yeah.
And then kind of taking a look at that morning routine as well and figuring out maybe one or two things that you can do to just refill your cup before starting your day. Sure. I would say, honestly, like start there, get the fuel and hydration down, like make sure you're eating enough. And I'm sure you go over that with your clients.
Yeah.
And then like also adding in an active recovery workout into your schedule, I think that would be a really great place to start.
Ooh, can we talk a little bit more about what that might look like for some of us? Because I suspect knowing a lot of my all or nothing friends that are out there, they are going hard or they are going home. What does the active recovery workout look like?
Yeah, definitely. So it could look a lot of different ways. And I encourage people to do things that they love, right? So I love to go outside and go hiking. Mm-hmm. Someone else might love to do, you know, let's say paddleboarding, dancing, insert your favorite thing. That could be one form of active recovery because you're staying active on your non-strength training days and you're just going out and you're having fun and you're keeping that intensity kind of low.
Yeah.
Right? So that's one version. And then you could think about, I have this template that I use with my clients for active recovery. So if you want to think of it in a more structured way, you can. So the first way is more unstructured. It's more play. It's more, let's get outside and let's just like move. Right. The other way would be 5 minutes of breathing and mobility, and then 15, 20 minutes of either body weight, light kettlebell, or interval tempos, like on a bike, something like that. But keeping that heart rate pretty low, okay, moderate. And we could talk into like specific, wow, words are hard, specific heart rate for like active recovery. Uh-huh. And then maybe a 5 minute breathing cool down and some soft tissue work. So like foam rolling. So total, what's that? 30 minutes. We could find 30 minutes. I mean, I'm scrolling on Instagram for more than 30 minutes.
Lord knows I am too. But okay, I love two things about this because I feel like we both describe the same kind of thing, but in a different way. Like when you talk about active recovery, I talk a lot about like movement versus training. And so the active recovery piece is just like the movement bit. And in many cases, that's just like whatever the thing you love. And I know for a lot of my clients, the reason why they're strength training in the first place is so that those activities like their hike is going to feel easier for them when they're just getting out there and doing the things that they love. And then in regard to, I love what you're talking about, even using like a lighter strength training day as a form of active recovery, because I love thinking about it as like a spectrum, because when you're lifting, you could literally do this. And I've talked to my clients about this before when they're coming back from an injury, for example, your strength training workout could exist at the difficulty of activities of daily life. If you go 100%. Light enough.
100%. And you could shut off the timers. You can shut off all of the metrics.
Yeah.
Take a break from tracking, you know, like if tracking's useful for you, like keep going. I love tracking. Uh-huh. Right. But an active recovery day could be like zero tracking, just like be in your body, be in your mind, you know, put on some good music, right. Or, you know, shut off the music and just like, you know, be outside. I think the key piece is the whole reason we're doing after active recovery is to reduce stress, to get blood flow to the muscles so that we're ready to go out and get stressed again, right? Which is inherently a workout. The whole point is not to think of it like an afterthought, something we'll get to if we have to, but to do it because it's fun. It's going to increase our quality of life and actually it's going to increase your performance in the gym. So really like we don't have time not to do it. It's the best.
All of these things kind of feed into each other. And I love your jorts. Can we talk about the jorts for a second?
Let's talk about the jorts.
I'm such a fan of this because one thing that I don't think nearly enough people do is like plan their rest days, be that like an active recovery day or you know, something that's a little bit more laying low, but I love how you talk about bringing out your jorts on those days, because I feel the same. Like I plan my rest days when I'm not going to the gym and I get a kick out of wearing like jeans or jean shorts. Like it's the day that I don't have to wear athleisure and it's novel to
me. It's the best. I love it. And I love that you also like, you empathize with my appreciation for the jorts and the, you know, the non-workout clothing, athleisure. I love hiking in jorts because it helps me take myself less seriously. And like, I have a history of taking myself very seriously.
Yeah.
So, it really it helps me get out of the shoulds, the structure, the recovery needs to look this way and like just put on your fucking jorts and like go out there on the trail and have some fun, like get lost. Which is what I did yesterday. And so
like actually lost, like scary lost or like purposely get lost.
It could be both, but yesterday was, we took a couple wrong turns and it wasn't scary. It was fine, but it added an extra mile of unplanned movement. But I think that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Active recovery can be what you want it to be. It can be structured. in that template that I laid out, or it can be unstructured, and it can be a combination of both. I think as adults, we've steered so far away from going out and having fun and playing and like running away from the shoulds that I think that could be kind of a disservice to this whole thing. So if we add in more play and just, you know, unplanned movement, I think we'd be a lot better off.
Yeah.
So, everyone go buy a pair of jorts or insert your version of jorts.
Exactly. Exactly. Why do you think there isn't as much of a focus on this in most fitness spaces?
So quite honestly, because it's a lot easier to sell getting sweaty and tired.
Yeah.
Than it is recovering, right? I think there's ways to do it. But also with a lot of the marketing that you see, I don't know if you've seen this, Jenna, but with a lot of like the a lot of the wearables, like the Oura Ring and the Whoop, and I think there's a lot of great things about those things. But it's these high level competitive athletes, you know, like crushing their workouts, but also like doing the recovery thing. Uh-huh. And then it's just another message that general population people are getting, that like, oh, recovery isn't for me. Like, I don't train that hard, so like, I don't need to recover. When in fact, life is a full-time sport.
Yeah.
Like, we need this just as much as people who train, who are competitive athletes and train for a living. It's just as much stress. So, it's absolutely for you if you're not a competitive athlete. And I think, I will say one thing that came out of the pandemic is that people are starting to talk a lot more about rest and recovery. So uh-huh. I think that is one positive. Not like we're here to talk about positives that came out of the pandemic, right? But I do think the conversation is shifting. I think we are talking a little bit more about these topics, but I think we could be doing an even better job, and we need to keep going. So
yeah, and I'm sure you felt this way too. Or maybe your revelation came a little bit earlier. I think the pandemic was a moment for me where I was forced to slow down. And now I cannot imagine myself going back to doing all of the things and carrying on the schedule that I had pre-lockdown pandemic. And I think a lot of people are realizing the same in a lot of ways, especially when it comes to setting boundaries around work and what people are willing to tolerate and stand for in a place of employment. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are realizing once everything came to a grinding halt that we just need to slow the fuck down a little bit more.
I mean, honestly, the pace that we were going was unsustainable. That wasn't just a fitness industry issue. Uh-uh. That issue spans industries. I saw the same thing in social work. I know the same thing happens in corporate America, in education, with my siblings. It's, it's capitalism, right? So
yep.
It's, that is a pace that is, that is unsustainable. And so that's why recovery needs to be at the top of the conversation in the health and fitness space, because we have the potential to be the preventative healthcare workers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, of course, strength training and getting stronger and these workouts that we plan for our clients are so important. Uh-huh. And also they're total trash if we're not talking about the recovery pieces. If the foundation isn't there to support the stress of a workout, what's the point?
Yeah. So that kind of leads me into my next question, which is, how do you personally help your clients decide whether or not they're going to lift? And if yes, how hard? I have kind of a system that I use for my people, but I'm curious to hear how you help your people navigate this.
I love this question so much. And I'm so happy to hear that you're doing it with your people. And like, I actually know quite a few people who do this. So I think that's great. This needs to happen more and more. Okay, so I think I mentioned before that recovery is built into my clients' workout calendar. Uh-huh. It's already there. The recovery pieces are just little things for them to check off every day on training days and not on training days. So it's okay. Like, every single day of the week, they've got stuff to work on. So that way, if they show up to the gym and they're like, I'm exhausted today. Why do these weights feel so heavy? We have information to go off of. It's not just random. If you show up to the gym and you're exhausted, there is reason for that. And so yes. I love data for that reason, because it takes the shame and the blame out of it. It's like, no, we're not trash people and like whatever, because we show up and we're tired. We're tired because we didn't sleep last night, because our kid kept us up all night, because we have a zillion deadlines at work. Like, there is a reason you're tired and the weights feel heavy, and let's lean on the data for that. Okay. So that's number one. It's built into the calendar. So we know what's going on throughout the whole week. But more specifically, like on training days, when they show up, I have my clients do a pre-training check-in. Uh-huh. And that might be similar to what you have your people do. So they rate their energy level, their mood, whether or not they're hydrated and had something to eat beforehand. Uh-huh. Any pain or soreness in the body. It's a kind of like, what do they call that? A Likert scale, like kind of 0 to 10.
Sure.
And so that way I'll have that ahead of time before they come to their session, whether it's virtual or in person, or even if they're doing training on their own. So that's a way for them to check in with their bodies and their minds before their training session. So it's like, okay, if you answer this, you're going to go at a lower intensity. If you answer this, you're going to go at a moderate intensity. And I explain kind of what that is for each client. And then if you're like tens across the board, eights to tens across the board, you're going to do the session as written. Uh-huh. Of course, there's always room to stop and adjust as needed, because you're an adult and you know, there's always room for that, but that's just saying that you're recovered enough, you're prepared enough to handle the stress of a training session.
Yes. Okay. I love this. And like off the books, I totally love to know like how you do this specifically and like whether or not, you know, just like trainer to trainer, how you do that. Yeah. For mine, I tend to ask my clients a lot of the same things, except for it tends to be a lot more, especially for the people that I'm just doing programs for, or people that are in my group program, tends to be a little bit more self-guided, especially if somebody's like pulling up an app and doing a workout on their own. I kind of have a little checklist to go through, and it might seem like more busy work to some people, but this is information. And this comes back to like what I swear I'm going to get like tattooed. Like if I ever get a tattoo, be curious, not judgmental, because when we dig into the data, like you're mentioning, and you realize all of these factors that are coming into play, it's like, oh, I'm not lazy. And like, there's nothing wrong with me that I'm feeling tired and not motivated. Like this is why. And then you get to choose what you want to do with that information.
Exactly. And so I think it all comes back to education. Uh-huh. I would say when I first started lifting weights, this was not taught in gyms. This was not a conversation.
No.
I had to teach myself. I had to teach myself what all this meant. And it's wild to me that this hasn't been part of the conversation until like the last few years, right? In terms of like mainstream fitness conversation in gyms. I'm sure you still go into like a big box gym and this is like, oh, you know, get your recovery in, but like not telling people how to do that. And so,
you know what it is? If they could find a way to package this up and convince people that it would give them six pack abs or like whatever, you know, fashionable body part du jour, then maybe it would sell. But it's not like, it's not this sexy thing, but it's what I think we all want and need, because, well, we could go off on a whole tangent here. I am, and you've probably heard me talk about this before, Julie, I'm of the mindset that whenever we have like a certain thing we want, like whether that's like a goal weight or like wanting our body to look a certain way, like any kind of aesthetic goal, oftentimes that's tied to a feeling. Like mm-hmm. There's something else underneath that that you're chasing. And at the end of the day, I think what we all want is to feel energized and healthy and strong. I mean, you know, give or take a few things here or there, but at the end of the day, if you present that stuff to somebody on a platter and ask them like, hey, do you want to feel like this? Nobody's going to say no.
No one's going to say no.
Nobody's going to say no.
If you, you know, this isn't for like either of our audiences, right? But like, if we are getting down to the science of it, if you want a six pack, you have to sleep 8 hours a night.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, like that's a reality too. That could be a way to market it to the mainstream, not promoting, right? Like this idea that you need to change your body, but like, if you do, like that is something that you have to do, but like, who doesn't want to feel better? Who doesn't want to go in and crush their workouts if they want to, if they like intensity? Who doesn't want to show up for their lives outside the gym with a ton of energy and not having brain fog and feeling like shit? Like everyone wants to feel good, right?
Right.
I think we can make that generalization.
Yeah. I think it's pretty fair. And I think, you know, like I come from this anti-diet space where the message, and I think it's changing now. I think the more, or maybe I'm just discovering more fitness professionals that think like me, thanks to the internet. But I think a lot of the message that I first got when I started dabbling into that world, where the message was like to not train hard because that's disordered. In fact, I had an interesting conversation with somebody in the comments of a post that I made on my Instagram on Friday, where I was talking about like examples. I was like, this is diet culture, but this is not, or like this thing is not inherently diet culture, but when you use it this way is. And one of the things that I mentioned was intense workouts. And somebody came back to me and was like, honestly, do you actually think that there are people out there that are doing intense workouts, like not coming from a place of diet culture? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And this is totally off topic, but like, what do you think it is for you? Because for me, I think I'm a person who just requires a lot of like, I guess like input or stimulation. Maybe it's my ADHD, maybe social worker Julie and I need to talk about this too, but there's something about like the physical input of heavy weights that my body really craves, in the same way it's obsessed with your hot pink tank top right now.
It's a good color, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've been super into this hot pink lately. So
like intensity on all levels for me. And I don't know what it is, but give it to me.
100%.
Anyway, roundabout answer to that question. What do you think it is for you that brings you into really enjoying intensity in your workouts?
For me, it is the direct connection to strength in the gym translating into strength outside of the gym in a way that, like, I show up for things that scare the hell out of me now outside the gym because of the strength that I've built inside the gym. And I don't think without stepping into that discomfort in the gym, I would have been able to do that outside of the gym. So, but I will say that I haven't always been this way. It used to come from a super disordered place of doing the most and thinking you had to be dripping in sweat and panting at the end of every session, and putting recovery in a reactionary category. But that was quite honestly just lack of education. I didn't know any better, right? So
yeah.
I think I do want to say first that I just loved that post that you made. It really resonated with me, because like recovery, like training, it always has to come back to the individual and the why, right? You like intensity. Why do you like it? Why do I like it? What's the goal? What's the reason behind it? And I think that's kind of a disservice to assume that someone is being disordered without knowing their why. I think that is a huge generalization.
Yeah.
And doesn't give credit to the humanness of people. And yeah, so I don't know if that answers your question, but I don't think that we can necessarily assume that every intense workout is coming from a disordered place. I think a lot of them do, right? But I think a lot of them don't. And so just being open to that. And so it started with having performance goals. I did, this was a bunch of years ago, I did a pull for pride event. And so I was trying
to.
You did?
I did.
So fun.
2019. I know. I was going to do it again this year. And then it's Chicago sold out, which is great for them, but sad for me.
Maybe next year, right?
Yeah, maybe next year.
So, you know, getting that one rep max so that you can raise money for this incredible organization, right? Uh-huh. So like that is another way intensity cannot be disordered. I think there's so much room for intensity to be great, to be able to react quickly to your dog crossing the street to chase a squirrel. Like sometimes we need to train hard so that we can show up for our lives in the best place possible. Right.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
It does. And I have to imagine, and I'm curious what you want to add to this, how our own self-care and recovery practice allows us to do that even more.
Can you ask that again?
Yes. I'm going to ask it a different way. So do you think it's possible? And if yes, how does our efforts towards self-care and recovery, like spending a little bit more time on that, how might that show up and potentially allow us to do more, whether it's in the gym or, you know, chasing our dog with the squirrel? Like, how does more recovery translate into better
outcomes?
Like, outcomes. Yeah, thank you for that word. Yes, outcomes.
No, it's okay. It's midday, like for me, and later in the day for you. So words are hard.
Words are hard.
I mean, it gives us more bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So you will lift heavier weight if you want to inside the gym. So it increases performance, right? Gives you more energy to show up and actually be excited to train. Not saying that you're going to be excited to train every day. That's just not reality. Like, yeah, ever. And it's going to give you the capacity to show up for your family and your friends and your passions outside the gym with energy, again, with bandwidth. If we keep pulling from this empty cup, we're going to have nothing left to give. So in fact, I forget who said it. I had a conversation the other day about pulling from an overflowed cup. She does so much before she engages with other humans that her cup is overflowing, right? And so I think that's an important piece too. Like if you work with other humans, whether it's a health and fitness capacity or a therapist, educator, whatever, that cup needs to be even more full.
Yes. Ah, fuck yes. It made me think of, I saw like a, I don't know, it was like a retweet or something like that, where it was like, we should all walk around with one of those, like the battery thing that you have at the top of your phone that just shows like how much juice you have left. I now feel like I want to whip out my inner kindergarten teacher and make like little like coloring pages for my clients that like,
I mean,
fill up their battery.
I think that would actually be really effective.
Oh my God, I'm going to do it. Yeah. New freebie.
New freebie.
It's jennaj.com/coloring. Kidding, but only kind of. I might have to create that.
But, and this is kind of deviating a little bit from what we're talking about, but you know that expression you always say about like, it's the same flavor of, is it the same?
Shit sandwich. Another flavor of the same shit sandwich. Yeah, shit sandwiches.
We had to come back to the shit sandwich. So
always.
when we're saying stuff like, oh, don't forget to get in your self-care, don't forget to get in your recovery, just rest, I think that's another flavor of the same shit sandwich that mainstream fitness culture says when they're like, go hard or go home, never miss a Monday, do this, do that. Because it's not specific. It's not built into the calendar, right? It's just this general talk. And I don't think the average human knows how to listen to their bodies, to self-regulate, to do all of those things. So I think with those messages, I think needs to come some education.
Yeah. And, you know, that's where number one, working with a coach can be really helpful. But I'm thinking of something else here, which I think I see far too many people do, where they don't let themselves fully relax. Like I'm thinking of one client in particular who would set her alarm at like 4:30 in the morning because she had the intention of getting up to work out. But she would do this like every morning until she got like whatever workouts in. And some mornings she couldn't get up because she was too tired. I'm like, I have an idea. How about you plan like what days you're not going to do it and then actually let yourself sleep on those mornings? How about that? And she was like,
phew. Mind blown. Sometimes you just need like the visual of it and also maybe the permission. Like,
yeah.
That it's okay, right?
Yeah, because otherwise it's just this like ambiguous, like I should.
Yeah, and the shoulds are not helpful. Like You and I both know that. Yeah, they're not helpful. And with everyone tackling so much, I don't know about you, but all the people in my circles are trying to do so much. All the things. And if there's not words are really freaking hard for me today. If there isn't a plan, right? If we're not getting specific with what we're trying to do, like really freaking specific on each day, it's just not going to happen, right? So that's where I think plans are so helpful. But of course, having flexibility built into the plans, like, okay, have these three options for your recovery today. And do whichever one feels right in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to get super rigid with it.
Right. We could all stand to do that. I mean, even when you're following a program, there's still, I think, a lot of wiggle room in there to let it kind of be fluid and let it really be what you need it to be.
And giving clients the tools to understand how to make it their own, because I think like too much flexibility just like makes people feel like, no, I don't know what to do. Right.
Right.
So flexibility within the structure. If yes. That makes sense.
That's 100%. Absolutely. And gosh, I was going to say something else on this. Oh, I was going to come back to tracking really quick. Cause that's something that you talk about that I have changed my thoughts on over the years. And I think you said this so beautifully. I used to be an obsessive tracker and I didn't use it very well. I had like, before like Apple Watches and Fitbits were even a thing, I had like the calorie tracker, like heart rate monitor that like you have to wear around your rib cage. That's like so awkward.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
I had one of those and I was like obsessed with my Fitness Pal and all of that. And then when I realized that I was being disordered with it, I let it all go. I was like, no tracking whatsoever. But what's been really interesting to me is working with clients who are very much data-driven people. They like that information and certain things they can use as neutral data. And I think that's really, I guess, a really beautiful thing. And I think involves a certain level of self-awareness to know, hey, I can track this metric and feel totally fine about it. And then this one makes me act a little weird sometimes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How do you help your clients navigate tracking different things?
So I think it's all about the initial consultation with the client, setting yourself up to ask the questions about things that might be triggering for them. So, for example, I have a client who finds it really helpful to track their sleep, their hydration, and their protein intake. That is super helpful for them. Not saying that those need to be the things for everyone, but they find it very triggering to track anything else related to food. Okay. So we don't do any of that.
Yeah.
So I give a handful of options for people to track. And I say, like, which ones do you feel like would be helpful for you? Here's why these could be helpful. I give them the information. And then from there, it's all about they choose.
Yeah.
Giving people the education and then the choice, because again, they're adults, like they're not children, right? I actually had a client recently who was in a really busy season of work. She moves, like all of the like big life events you can imagine. And we were doing a lot of tracking at the time because we were doing a 30-day challenge, sleep and recovery challenge.
Ooh, that sounds like my kind of challenge.
It's a whole nother conversation because I actually evolved from challenges being problematic. And so anyway, there's like a both and for that. And she straight up said to me, like, I find tracking all of this stuff to be really overwhelming right now. And I just like, I can't.
Yeah.
And so I was like, so let's not do it.
Yeah. You
know? And so like just giving people permission to have seasons of their life where tracking might be a useful tool. But also in more stressful, busier seasons, it actually might not be. So I think it needs to be really catered to the individual and like creating the trust from the beginning to let the client come to you when they need to switch stuff up.
Yeah. And I'm thinking even about tracking certain things, for example, like let's just use hydration as an example here. I think there are ways that you could be really dialed in and specific with that. And there are also ways that you could be really flexible with that. Like, hey, I'm going to try to fill up this water bottle 3 times today.
Exactly. Exactly. And like, you're not a failure if you don't do it.
Right.
Like, but like, here's why your joints might feel like shit if you got in like 30 ounces of water. Right. So it's just information.
Yeah. It's information. And then it's like, of course, like you can get mad about whatever you want, I guess, but like if your sleep was garbage and you only ate enough food for a toddler and you're on your like fifth cup of coffee, but you hadn't had a glass of water, like you don't really get to get pissed that your workout feels like garbage. I mean, I guess you can get pissed if you want to, but like.
Yeah, exactly. But like, there's the information, like that's why recovery is so cool. Right.
Yeah.
But also like using quantitative data, like that all the trackers give us, but also the qualitative pieces.
Yeah.
So like not just saying like, how did you sleep and like how long, just actually saying like, okay, maybe let's take a look at like why you were tossing and turning or why it took you so long to fall asleep. There's always reasons for that.
Yeah.
So yeah, just leaning a little bit more on that and letting the client like control the story a little bit.
I love it. I could talk to you all day and I know. Have you come back and ask you more things. What else am I missing? Is there anything else that you want the people to know?
We could talk all day about this. We really could. there is a freebie I created a while back about how to train for your cycle, and recover for your cycle. So it's all stuff related to when might be the best time based on your cycle to train a new skill, to try to train for that one rep max or like heavy lift. But also how to recover from all of those things and what we might need in certain phases of our cycle. So, you have that on the link I sent you. So
perfect.
People can check that out, like maybe some foods to check out, different, sleep requirements that might be necessary during different phases of their cycle. So that's another data point people might find interesting.
Oh, good. I will link to all of that in the show notes. And where can the people find you, Julie?
So I am mostly on Instagram these days at The Other 23 Hours Coaching. I am working on rebranding my website. So everything is going to be The Other 23 Hours Coaching. And I'm going to have a new offering and freebie in the fall, all related to recovery. So stay tuned for that. Nice. And then in the link I gave you, Jenna, people can sign up for my email list to learn more there. So yeah, that's where people can find me.
Yay. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. That was such a fun conversation. And I feel like we could have done another hour. That was such a blast.
We could have. We'll do the other, what is that? 22 hours, I guess.
Yeah. We'll do the other 22 hours. That's perfect.
All right. Thanks, Julie. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Talk to you soon, Jenna.
I hope you got as much out of that conversation with Julie as I did. And if you want to learn more about how to find Julie, how to follow her, how to work with her, all of the links for that will be in the show notes. And likewise, if you liked this episode and want this sort of message to reach even more people, hop on over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star rating and review. It would mean the world to me and help this message really get out there. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, and we will talk soon. Thanks again for tuning into Tough Cookie Talks. I'm so glad you're here. If you want to learn more about me and how we can work together, visit my website, itsjennaj.com, or follow and tag me on Instagram at itsjennaj. I would love to hear from you. If you liked this episode and want to hear more, make sure that you click subscribe and follow along so that you don't miss a single show. Then take a moment and leave me a 5-star rating and review so we can help this podcast and this message reach even more people. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.